I'm Bob Snedden. In our town right now, we're going to be visiting with our state senator for the area, Senator Dick Anderson, he former mayor of Lincoln City. Welcome to our town, Senator.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here.
The end of June wrapped up the annual session in Salem, but, you know, 1 year they're longer, 1 year they're shorter. This was the long session.
Correct.
On a scale of 1 to 5, as far as accomplishments, things that you wanted to get done in Salem during the session, where on that scale would you rate it?
You know, I would definitely above a 3.
Okay.
So I was pleased with policy issues that we were able to push through. I was able to push through because mine are kind of different from maybe the norm.
Right.
As well as some of the budget fiscal things that we're resources was able to bring to the district. So not as plentiful of funding cash as we had in 21 because the feds threw so much money at every state.
And, oh, yeah, recovery
and
money.
Flush with money. But I thought we did real well on the coast.
Now, your district, it's a long, skinny district, but virtually all of it is coastal. You did pick up some this last year.
Yes, with redistricting. Yeah. So as of January of this year, I actually gave up 3 counties, Tillamook, part of Polk and Yamhill, and got pushed into Benton. So I incorporate Philomath. Mm-hmm. So now it's all of Lincoln, a part of Benton, westerly part of Lane, Douglas, and Coos.
Okay.
So 5 counties instead of 7.
Yeah. Do you find the issues from Lincoln City, even into Philomath and all the way down into Coos Bay, do you find them to be common?
They are on the coastal communities are very common. That's kind of driven where my areas of interest are. And as I'm getting to know Philomath and into the valley a little more, it's still very rural. So that's been the common link there. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I think even though going into the valley, I don't have the big urban areas. I think there's a really common area. And for me, as a reminder for the listeners, there's a lot of crises going on in Oregon, areas that I think really need to pay a lot of attention to.
Well, and the one first thing Governor Kotek declared when she was sworn into office in January was the homeless emergency, and she focused on 7 urban counties. You actually led the charge to expand that, didn't you?
Right. There were 26 counties left out of that emergency piece. So actually, Representative Gomberg and I and the Coastal Caucus.
And Representative Gomberg is the northern half of your district.
Correct.
The representative.
And Representative Wright is the southern. Right. But we looked at that and said, whoa, hold it. We have the same issues as urban areas. So rural needs attention. So, yes, we got pretty noisy. And actually, to her credit, the governor acquiesced to allowing another bill into the program. She didn't expand the emergency clause, but what we got was some resources
You got to piggyback on what was already in motion.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Coming out of the session, you wrapped it up. You actually wrapped it up a couple hours early, didn't you?
A couple hours, yeah. On the 25th of June, yes.
Coming out of it, though, what are you happiest about that you accomplished for folks who live along the Central Oregon coast?
I look at my areas of focus was housing, and I'm on the Senate Housing Committee. I'm vice chair, and that continues to be a crisis for all of Oregon and certainly in rural areas, the lack of affordable and just accessible housing. Child care, same kind of situation. Child care is hugely expensive if you can find it at all,
right.
and it really hurts on the coast. And then the health cares, and I include health care as 3. It's the physical, the behavioral or mental health, mm-hmm. and oral. I'm learning so much about the impact of dental has on your physical health. So the health care and then education. So, and I'm on the, as a policy committee, on the Senate Education Committee. So I've concentrated on those kind of 4 big areas because I think those are the crises in Oregon that don't get solved just overnight. And certainly housing and childcare are good examples. We've had those going on for a long time. And I think part of my observation is we as members, electeds, seem to think the answer is just throw money at it and it'll go away, and then we can move on to another issue next session. And trying to keep people, you know, at the table discussing, you know, what is or isn't happening. And yes, we did good things last session, but we've got so much more to do. And housing is a good example. I'm on the governor's production housing council.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we look at all the things that are going on, very little has been actually producing housing.
That's right.
Now, there's been money thrown at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to look at even the homeless emergency crisis, what are the root causes? And just by calling it what it is, people without housing, there's a lack of housing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a supply-demand kind of guy, and the more you build, the cheaper it'll get. So, you know, oversupply, not that it'll ever happen, but, you know, I'd love to overbuild housing at all price points, rent points.
I know here in Florence, we got a considerable number of rental units, apartments that are going to be coming online in the next few months.
Right. And that helps because that should, one, alleviate some of the issues and perhaps even drop down some of the rent costs. And yes, the time that it takes to build some of this stuff adds to the price because time is money. And when a developer takes 4 years or 5 years to work through the process, permit, you know, and all the research and inspections and getting funding, getting it built, you know, it just adds up.
Yeah.
And so I've been trying to shorten that gap, looking at those kind of things, because I can't do a lot about the cost of wood or materials,
right. But
the process and the time. And I think we've accomplished some of those things. We're really shining the light on it. So I'm enthusiastic about
production.
But
you're talking about speeding up the process, not shortcutting things.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot of duplications in the process.
Right.
I think we also do things lineal, you know, rather than I think we can stack some of the stuff
and
cut down the time. And, you know, it's been a system built over time that I just think we just keep adding to it rather than really looking at it.
Senator Dick Anderson is a Republican senator for the district we are in here, which is Senate District 5, which runs from the northern reaches of Lincoln County to
just past Coos Bay, the city of Coos Bay.
So you don't have Coquille or Bandon, that's
I right. do not. Yeah.
But I'm
a golfer, so I'm hoping someday I'll get Bandon.
But also inland a little bit to Philomath in Benton County. Back to the rental questions. It's a big issue in Dune City, I know it's becoming, and it's getting that way a little bit in Florence. And I know it's been a big issue in Lincoln City for many, many years, and that's the issue of vacation rentals like VRBO, Vacasa, Airbnb, that sort of thing. I'm not picking on any particular brand.
Right.
But seems like in Dune City, more and more homes that might be nice rentals make great vacation rentals, and they've been purchased by limited liability companies for the sole intent and purpose of going on to the rental market.
Yes, and that's not a new issue. To your point, it's been
several years making in Lincoln County.
Exactly. And when I was first mayor in 2011, tackled that issue. And, you know, I think over time we have come up with some answers in Lincoln City, but it's been up and down the coast.
Yeah.
So it's not going away. But I do have to say part of the issue is a statewide issue. And we are not, as a state, we are not friendly to landlords. First and foremost, we make it real hard on landlords, the red tape, the requirements, rent control, all this kind of stuff. So one should not be surprised that an individual says, I can't take it any longer. I don't want to sell my real estate. I'll just turn it into a nightly rental because now I'm no longer a landlord in that category. But the minute I go 30-day monthly rental kind of stuff or leases, I'm into that. And that's part of the problem, quite frankly, is I know a lot of people who and small investors who have moved their house, their real estate into a nightly rental because of the problem. So, you know, we got to think about the big picture and what the impact is and what are we doing.
All right. Senator Dick Anderson with me on Our Town today. Senator, I want to get to the final issue, and it's not really the elephant in the room, but it's lurking there. And that was the walkout in the last session. Now, you did not participate in the walkout. Can you tell me about what caused that walkout and why did you?
Sure. Yeah, for clarification, I did participate in the concept. I'm very supportive of my fellow senators. And to set the stage a bit, we called ourselves the Oregon 13. And that's because there's 12 Republican senators and one independent who all participated. So we were a group. I did not physically leave the building, or I was always on the floor. I think I missed one day out of the 160. So, yes, I was there. But as background, one, my caucus, the Republican senators, voted me early in the session as a deputy leader. So I like to think that is a plus, because my district, as we've talked about here, Senate District 5, is a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. It's what I would call a purple district. It's not predominant Republican, not predominant Democrat. It's really predominant unaffiliated voters. And I'm a bit more less conservative than some in that caucus. And so I took it as a plus that they wanted a more calming voice. So they asked me, the caucus then asked me not to physically walk, be on the floor in order to field questions and to talk to the other side. I like to say it's because of my radio look. I'm a pretty face. You know,
so your radio look?
My radio look. Isn't that what Senator Wyden talks about? He's got the look for radio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But so, that because the other thing that happened was leadership changed in the whole building, all new leadership. And so there's that bit of not knowing, when you have a majority party that is so dominant and has been so dominant for 40 years in that building at the Capitol, and now a leadership change. So there's bound to be some settling in, and there was. It didn't go smoothly.
No, it did not. Yeah.
So, and there's personalities. So I was there to help forge some of that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, even as a minority party or minority caucus, we represent, a large geography, landmass of Oregon.
Yeah.
And they expect to be, those people expect to be represented, and they should be. So we had an agenda that we laid out early, the Senate Republicans. Early in the session, I want to say about April, we realized none of our bills were going anywhere. Now, not that they all had to, but I mean, none of them were going anywhere.
Yeah, early on in the session, I could see it shaping up that none of them were even going to be considered.
Yeah. Let me insert, Bob, this is, I've found a lot of audiences I talk to is usually it comes back, well, why don't you guys just sit down and talk? Well, that sounds good. But let me set the stage, because the way the building works is the majority party decides who's leadership, okay, in both chambers.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership decides, and that's the majority party, then decides who are chairman of committees and who gets to sit on those committees. And I can tell you every committee is a dominant majority party. They have at least one, if not two, additional majority party members. So they control the committees. They also decide which bills go to a committee. So now it kind of sets up. Now the chairman of that committee, who's a majority party member, decides which bills advance in the committee. Now, I said I was vice chair of housing, but that's all. It's a title.
Yeah.
Very little input on which bills. Now, I have a good relationship with Senator Jama, who is the chair of housing. So we did talk, but not all committees are that way.
Right.
And so, now you've got what we have, 3,000 bills that came through, and they get sorted out by committees. And so the minority parties lost in their bills, get assigned to a committee, may or may not get a hearing, certainly don't get a work session, and certainly aren't going to end up on the floor for a vote. So, I think that's – I would hope the listener would envision that and say, okay. And this is where I insert the kind of thought that says, if this was an ethnic thing, majority, minority, and ethnic mixed in, what would we expect a minority to do? Would we expect them just to sit there and take it? And I would hope not. And I think that's the kind of stuff you would hope that with leadership and everything, there'd be some kind of compromise. But there wasn't. I'm hoping better times going forward. But this was the kind of a last resort, our only resort, to get a hearing, so to speak, from majority party leadership to say, hey, listen to us. Listen to us, you know, to some extent, and help us represent our people and get some of the bills through that made some sense.
Do you think you accomplished what the party was looking for?
Yes. The reason I would say that is, remember, early on, there was a lot of publicity around the majority party indicated, we're not going to budge with those rascals. You know, that.
Yeah.
Let them burn, so to speak. Well, you know, finally, you know, they did. They negotiated. And that's all we have. So some of the bills.
And at times it seemed like that negotiation was pretty rocky.
Very rocky.
Yeah.
Clearly, there was nothing until the 10-day unexcused absences occurred, which personally, I think that was a mistake on their part, because now you got, you know, at least 10 senators who have 10 days or more unexcused absences that are kind of in jeopardy. They put their careers in jeopardy to be able to run again.
And kind of veering off topic a little bit, but now they want to defy the voice of the voters who approved that ballot measure. They want to challenge it in court now because they put themselves in that position.
Right. Well, exactly. But I think there's nothing wrong with that, because what we've found is when measures come through that process, it's not very well vetted.
We've found that over the years, several times in Oregon.
And that's part of what we reading it, also think there. So we'll leave it up to the courts.
Yeah. Senator Dick Anderson, a Republican from Lincoln City. He is the 5th District Senator representing the Central Oregon Coast and a little teeny smidgen of the Willamette Valley in Philomath. Thanks for coming and visiting with us.
Love it. Thank you. Anytime, and I appreciate your tolerance.
Thank you, Senator, for stopping by our town.
All right. Thanks, Bob.